Hello Pod, I'm Chris Hewitt and welcome to the latest Empire Podcast preview special. We seem to have fallen into a nice little habit of late of doing these ahead of must-watch TV shows, and Ms. Marvel certainly falls into that category. It's the latest MCU show to hit Disney Plus, which it does this Wednesday, June 8th. And like Moonlight before it, it's a show that introduces a brand new character who's going to be a major player in the Marvel Cinematic Universe going forward. That character is Kamala Khan, aka Ms. Marvel, a young Pakistani-American girl who lives in Jersey City with her family and who suddenly finds herself imbued with cosmic powers, which she takes in her stride given that she's a massive fan of the Avengers in general, and one Avenger in particular, Carol Danvers, aka Captain Marvel. And in fact, she bases some of her look on Captain Marvel. And will next be seen in The Marvels, the Captain Marvel sequel. It's all connected. Anyway, I've seen the first two episodes, and let me tell you, Moon Knight brought us a character in Stephen Grant that you pretty much fell in love with right away, and they've done it again with Kamala Khan, played by newcomer and massive MCU fan, she could give us a run for our money, I feel, Iman Vellani, who has a poise, assuredness, confidence and swagger way beyond her years. She pops right off the screen from the start, even before she gets her powers, which have been, somewhat controversially, tweaked slightly for this show. That's just one of the things I talked about during the three interviews you're about to hear with the creative team behind the six-episode series. Head directors Adil and Bilal, head writer and creator Bisha K. Ali, and producer and actual Kamala Khan co-creator Sana Aminat. Now, this isn't a spoiler special. It is a preview of Ms. Marvel. It's designed to whet your appetite for what's to come, but we do talk about the first two episodes and certain things that happen in those first two episodes. Sometimes we talk about those things overtly, sometimes we dance around them and talk about them in the abstract. So you might want to listen to a couple of the interviews after you've seen the first episode. It's entirely up to you. But I will say that the show, like its title character, is so far a breath of fresh air that looks and feels unlike anything we've seen in the MCU so far, particularly on the small screen. Part of that comes from the visual template laid down by Adil El-Farby and Bilal Fallah, the directors of the first and last episode and executive producers on the show. I spoke to them first, and even though this is a shorter interview than usual for the Empire podcast, the two of them are such whirlwinds of energy that they packed enough in for a slot twice the length. So here we go, Adil and Bilal, as they like to be known, talking about establishing that visual template and energy, introducing Kamala Khan as a character, the show's emphasis on character over conflict in those first two episodes, and the giant set piece that ends the first episode. And yes, some small spoilers abound for that. Oh, and Adil is the first of the duo to speak. Do please enjoy. We are delighted to be joined on the Empire podcast for this Ms. Marvel preview special by the directors of the first episode, Adil and Bilal. How are you guys?
I'm good.
We're the directors of the first and the last one. And we're also executive producer of you know, following the whole show. So
indeed, which is exactly what my next question was. So thank you so much for that indeed. So,
That's patient.
I
can read your mind, bro.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah, or I'm just so predictable, one of the two. But I was going to ask about that, actually, because you have directed the last episode as well. And as executive producers on the show, it's very much up to you as the head directors as well to set the visual template for Ms. Marvel. And that's one of the things I loved about it, how fresh this feels and how different this feels. How energetic was your pitch to Marvel in the first place? Can you talk me through that?
Well, it's a bit as energetic as we are. So the Moroccan Belgium flavor. But it was together with our DP, Robrecht Havard, who did all our Belgium movies and Bad Boys for Life. We really wanted to have something that translates that vibrancy that was present in the comic book. The comic book is very colorful. It has really like cool shots that we would copy. And we just wanted to do something that is like fast-paced, is really phlegmatic, cool shots. And there was also that animation aspect, which was not present in the script, but which we really, really wanted, because we wanted to have a way to adapt that dream world, that fantasy world where she is to the screen. But we were a bit afraid of that, because we we thought that, okay, Kevin and Marvel would not allow it because it was not present in the other MCU shows or movies. And we were very inspired by Into the Spider-Verse, but obviously that was an animation movie.
Yeah.
So we came up with a whole dossier with you know, a presentation with examples and all that, and how we saw that animation and why it was important to us and to the character. And then, you know, surprisingly, Kevin said, yeah, go for it. Don't go overboard. Don't do it every 5 seconds, but go for it. And that's how we then designed that opening sequence where it was stop motion with a voiceover, the text messages as you would do, the environment that changes, the murals and all that come to life. And overall, just trying to have, you know, really nice, colorful, sweeping, moving shots as much as possible.
On the other hand, we're also big fans, you know, of American high school movies and
John Hughes and
the John Hughes movies, you know, Ferris Bueller.
Yeah. Parker Lewis Can't Lose, which is based on
Saved by the Bell.
Yeah, so all these
all that. We were like, oh, nice. Now we can make our own
American high school TV show.
And also, you know, we also have Spike Lee in our mind when you see New York, we wanted the New Jersey to be a character, like New York is in Spike Lee movies. So all of that just created this show that's a remix of all these influences.
Like hip hop.
That's amazing. I love that. I love that. There's some amazing camera moves as well. There's a moment, not to give too much away, folks listening at home who haven't seen the episode yet, but there's a moment where Kamala sits down and, well, spoiler alert, but she sits down on a sofa. And I love the way that you're, you know, the really unusual camera angle, the way the camera tracks with her, or she's having a conversation with her teacher and you do split screen in a really interesting way. So, you know, there were no rules here. You were throwing the rule book out.
Yeah, exactly. It was just trying to do, I mean, those stuff take like 15 takes to make it work. And, and when we try to explain it to the crew, what we're going to do, they're like, what are you going to do exactly? But that's a challenge. We love doing those
things. Yeah, it's funny. It's like, oh, let's try to do a shot like that. But then technically it's all.
You got to build it all. And it's super complex. But that's the fun of it, you know?
This is incredibly, I mean, Iman is phenomenal in the title role. And yeah, I believe this is her first time acting in front of a camera. It's her first time acting full stop, isn't it?
Yes.
First time
at all. Yeah.
That's wild. So you were the guys who were there on her very first day. Talk me through that. How nervous was she? Was she nervous? She strikes me as someone who maybe doesn't have nerves. What was that like?
Well, I think we were all nervous the first day, but she's a natural, you know?
She's a natural. She was herself, you know, already a big, big fan of the Ms. Marvel comic. And she herself is also like a big fan of Marvel, and Kevin Feige is her idol, and Iron Man is a favorite movie. So it's kind of, you know, really parallel with Kamala Khan's story. And when, you know, she's like an encyclopedia, she knows everything about the Marvel universe. So that for us as directors was a blessing. and she has this natural, you know, she's very authentic. She's real and she's very smart. She's a cinephile. She comes from Toronto. So she's been to Toronto Film Festival. She knows all about movies. She was kind of like, you know, a movie director herself. So
it was like one big team, and it was just crazy to have somebody that's for us like a filmmaker on our sides. That was a real pleasure.
Feels like it was her destiny to play Kamala Khan.
Indeed, because I was going to say, because guys, obviously, you know, Kevin Feige is also my idol, and I know a shitload about Marvel as well. And yet, if this had been me on day one, I would have been a puddle. So there seems to be something about the fact that I've read so much about how there's no line, you know, where Iman ends, Kamala Khan begins, and so on.
Yeah.
And so in terms of nailing the character, did you guys have to have many conversations with her? Did she arrive fully formed in terms of understanding the character and nailing Kamala?
I think she understood. She might be the person that understands the most Kamala Khan of everybody in the world.
So she was teaching you guys.
Yeah, exactly. We were more talking about, you know, her life, how she is, and her background, her family, friends, and all of that, and trying to inject as much of her personality into the character. And the story, you know, the story of Iman Vellani is the story of Kamala Khan, is that girl that, you know, grew up with the Marvel movies and never thought that one day she would be part of that. And all of a sudden, she is an actress in the MCU. She's playing a superhero. And that is just crazy to see. You know, it's almost meta to see what her story is and what the story is of Kamala Khan.
The show is many things. It is, as you guys say, quite rightly, it's a high school comedy. It's John Hughes meets Mean Girls, but with superpowers. But you also have this superhero origin tale also. And you have this very specific family drama, but it's a family comedy drama, I would say. Can you talk about that aspect of it, you know, tackling and nailing Kamala's cultural background and introducing her parents and her family, who I think are going to steal the show. Her dad in particular is hilarious.
Yeah. But the dad is his dad,
you know, like the sweet old man who has a lot of wisdom.
Same clothes. The Muslim padre, you know.
Yeah.
but it's the superpowers of Kamala Khan is actually her family and friends. That's a real superpower.
Yeah, it's kind of like us, you know. When we started making movies, we you know, you fail and you fall and you struggle, and then you have your friends and your family who's there to support you in all the ways, and that's what it is for Kamala Khan, you know, trying to find her way and having her family and friends being her superpower. Yeah. Like for us, there is also a really personal connection because we are Muslim, Belgian, Moroccans, and mm-hmm. we're between these two worlds, you know, the Belgium and Morocco. We don't know where we belong to when we were 16 years old. And same for Kamala Khan, who's between the American culture and the Pakistani Muslim culture. So for us, it was like super relatable and that personal connection. And plus the comic book really told that story. The comic book was already gold.
We had the best base we could imagine, you know, hope for. So, yeah.
And you have this this lovely thread that runs through both episodes I've seen so far, where there is this tension, especially with Kamala's mother, where she is very, very keen to obviously make sure her daughter is responsible and well looked after and safe, but also to uphold traditions. And Kamala is pushing against that and trying to forge something new. And is that, again, something that you guys were able to lock into?
Yeah, it's you know, reminds us of us, you know, when we want to try stuff out, to, you know, searching for ourselves, hanging with friends, and then our parents would say, no, this is not you. So that's something that's very realistic. And I think a lot of people, girls, Muslim girls, but also just I think everybody can recognize themselves in that aspect with parents and the struggle when you're a teenager.
Yeah, and I love the fact that it is so surprising and it is so fresh as well. I don't want to get too much into spoiler territory, but there's a really interesting immersion in character rather than action, I would say. You don't set up, or straight from the off anyway, you don't set up a villain, someone to oppose Kamala. Was that always the case, that we're just plunged into her world and it's not about conflict right away?
Well, it's first about her, you know, trying to have this grounded character of her and her conflicts as a teenager, as a Pakistani American teenager, which is already a lot of conflict. I mean, for us, you know, we didn't need to have a villain to have enough conflict in our lives as a teenager. And obviously, it's still an MCU show, so it will evolve. But I think that it was important to have people first, you know, getting to know her world and care about her, and then see how the story evolves and becomes bigger as her superpower starts to manifest.
Mm-hmm. And there's been a lot of talk about her powers, and how they're different. They're different, but, you know, but kind of the same from the comic book. There are tweaks, certainly. From a visual point of view, what was that like for you guys? How did you decide how to show her powers?
Yeah. I think you know, Kevin Feige wanted to have an adaptation, not a literally, you know,
translation
of the comic. So we adapted the superpowers, and it was very interesting because the first thing we read was like heart light.
Yeah.
And the heart light felt like, okay.
It was not really described in detail. You know?
So it was cool to create this new superpower with the visual effects team. And we wanted to, you know, capture still the spirit from in the comic book, you know, that she doesn't know how to use that superpower but still have those moments of, you know,
but the hand becomes big, but then with the lighting and it was, I mean, just from a pure visual standpoint, it was really cool to play with that light and the crystally aspect of it.
For us, there was a lot of influence from manga,
So it's our own anime thing that you know, if we have season two on our movie, we can even go further. But you know, who knows? Maybe there's a, in a multiverse, maybe there's a Kamala Khan who has exactly the same power. Who knows? Everything's possible, you know?
Adil, you've just complicated the matters. Do not.
Pandora's box.
Do not bring multiverse into this just yet. There's only one Kamala Khan as far as I'm concerned right now.
That's right. Or is there?
I've got you guys going a second, which is a real shame, but I did want to talk about the big centerpiece of the first episode, which is a convention I wish existed and want to go to, Avengers Con. That's really fun. How much fun was it for you guys to stage? I imagine it was pretty challenging.
Well, it was too much fun. Yeah, it was. I mean, we went on set and we just became crazy, you know.
We took selfies the whole time. We took, you know, the Ant-Man head, you know, the Thor hammer.
We were playing with all the toys, doing selfies, you know, trying to, you know, grab some t-shirts and all that. And then the producer had to, you know, focus.
Direct the scene. So,
yeah, it was really like you're really giggling the whole time.
I hope you never see the behind the scene footage.
There is some. But no, I mean, it was like, you know, a chance to do like the first big action set piece, and it was really a mix of a lot of practical effects and VFX, and obviously with all these extras and all that. So
we had a lot of fun with the Ant-Man head rolling, you know, like homage to Indiana Jones.
There was something that we came up with Chris Glaser, our production design, but it was just the greatest set that we've ever been on, actually.
Yeah, and that's so, I think that's so cool about this is, you know, Kamala Khan is a fan. She's a fan of the Marvel superheroes, and this is our, you know, our homage to all the fans of Marvel.
It's really an homage to the fandom, and we hope that they appreciate that. And even Tom Holland came on set one day.
Yeah, Tom Holland came on set.
Yeah,
really.
I also thought it was super cool. Yeah, they were shooting, you know, Way Home across, you know, the same lots, you know, across the streets. But he was really impressed too. So that was cool. I was thinking we had him here.
Yeah. So Spider-Man, watch out! Miss Marvel is coming.
Well, it's New Jersey and Queens and those places. Yeah. My New York geography, I know that they're quite far apart. Well, I gotta let you go. Thanks very much, Adil, Bilal. Yeah. Cheers.
Thank
pleasure.
You.
Thank you.
Peace.
Thank
Peace,
you.
Brother.
Okay, that was Adil and Bilal, as they prefer to be billed. Can't wait to see what they've got planned for the final episode. Next up in this grand interview jamboree is Bisha K. Ali, who created the show for television and is head writer on the series. She's a British comedian, podcaster, and writer, and I spoke to her about the show's particular specificity, not just in terms of Kamala being the first Muslim title character in the MCU, but also being a teenage girl, which in one very funny scene sees a moment of real progress for Marvel. We also spoke about Kamala's relationship with her parents, and we discussed just how famous the reclusive Captain Marvel actually is in the world of the MCU. Here we go. Miss Marvel head writer and creator, Bisha K. Ali. Enjoy. We're delighted to be joined in this Miss Marvel preview podcast by the show's head writer, Bisha K. Ali. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm so excited to be able to finally talk about this show in public.
How long have you been keeping mum, so to speak? Have you been...
Oh my gosh. I mean, I got this job in 2019. I don't know, in the before times. So keeping mum, I suppose, 3 years now. Well, not keeping mum. I think I'll still be keeping mum forever. I don't know. I feel like if I say the wrong thing, Kevin Feige will like rappel down through my skylight into my apartment and be like, no. I'll be keeping mum forever. Yeah.
Kevin's exhausted from having to do this over the years. He's constantly having to rappel through people's windows and do all sorts. It's tough on the old back over time. But
Absolutely.
So where did you start? Because the show feels so different to me than previous, certainly MCU shows that we have seen stylistically and in terms of the grammar. The visual grammar of the show, it feels very different. But obviously Kamala is you know, such a breath of fresh air, I would say, in the MCU. She feels unlike any character we've seen so far. So what was your starting point for bringing the show to the screen?
The starting point was the comics. Like, the comics are, I think it's the quickest turnaround from comics to a on-screen adaptation for any of their properties, for anything that Marvel has and has done in the past. And she meant so much to so many people in the comic books, and that was always the starting point, including myself. She meant a great deal to me as well. So the comic books were always the beginning point for how we'd go about doing this and how we would construct it. And specifically, her character, and I mean that sans superpower elements, I mean purely like who she is, her world, her relationships, her family, which was so important to me to like build on. I was like, we have never seen this, let's chase this. And then genuinely on the first day of the writer's room, I sat around with all of the writers. We'd already been interviewing. And one of the things I said to everyone is like, what is your greatest hope for this show? And what is your greatest fear? And we went around and discussed what those were. And luckily we're all deeply in alignment, which is great. And that was our starting point, is we want to build from a place for our most ambitious, most hopeful storytelling based off of these comics. Yeah, that was really where we started from in the writer's room. I mean, I'd already pitched a version of the show to Kevin by then. He was like, not that, but you, yes. So that's how we started out the process. And like I said, the whole thing was really based on her character and what this character is going to go through. And knowing that we had the luxury of time, we had the luxury of 6 hours, that most characters, I mean, Moon Knight accepted, didn't have the luxury of this much time in their origin story for us. And yeah, that, I think, we're so excited by that time and how we were going to use it.
That was one of the things I loved about it, that you take your time and you don't feel necessarily that you need to dial into a bad guy plot yet, so to speak. I suspect there will be an antagonist who will be introduced in due course, but this is very much about...
Imagine if the whole show was just vibes, though. Like, imagine if it was just Kamala vibes.
Honestly, not
to be this guy, but also it would be great. Like Kamala just vibing for 6 hours. Yes, come on.
We've said this many, many times in the Emperor podcast. We were huge fans of the MCU, and some of the villains are great. But every now and again, when a villain interrupts, it's like, oh, I wanted to hang out with these guys for a bit more. So, so it's great that we get to do that.
I'm a fan. That's exactly right, though. The way you just put that is exactly right in terms of my feelings. As I'm always like, oh, I just want to hang out with her. I want to spend time in her world and with the dynamic and the friendship dynamic and the family dynamic. And that was always in the back of my head, and to the extent that I had to be tempered and be like, yeah, okay, Bisha, let's go. So in some ways I was tempered because I just come off Loki and I was like, this is a huge show in terms of scope and I can't be out here pitching, like, I don't know, banana things that I was pitching at the beginning. But then at the same time, once we got into building and putting on the page her and these different dynamics, I was just luxuriating in it. And I feel like at least the response that we've seen over the first two episodes, I feel like people are luxuriating in spending time with her too. And that makes my heart so happy.
And her family also, who I think are phenomenal so far. There's the scene, and again, we can't get too much into because this is a preview.
I know which scene, if I had to guess.
Okay, guess, and then we'll see if we're on the same page.
But I feel like we can't say it because of the thingy.
Oh, that's true. That's a very, very good point.
Well, I'm like doing a mime at you. Like, that one?
Well, let's just say it's a scene involving her mother.
Yes.
And there's a very, very interesting... I love the relationship so far with her parents, where her father idolizes her. Both parents idolize her, of course. Mm-hmm. But her father idolizes her and would do anything for her to the point of, you know, well, we can't say. But...
Well, he does, yeah.
He does, yes. There's also... But her mother, there's a tension there. There's a tension between her mother wanting the best for her daughter wanting to fly the coop and plow her own furrow, and her mother wants to cling to the traditions a little bit. And was that something that you wanted to nail in a way, that very, very specific aspect of the family dynamic here?
Yes, it was something that was so important to us, and also to nail in a way that didn't feel stereotypical in that, oh, they just don't understand each other and their odds. I hope that we've accomplished something more complex than that, in that it's all coming from a very obvious place of love. And there's a deep sense of, oh, you just wish they could get on the same page because they do love each other. And I also think with teenagerhood, and certainly this is my experience, it just feels like it's a constant negotiation. Like, it's, you're negotiating your position with your parents are negotiating their new position with you as you're maturing. And I think that dynamic was really important. And I think it's really obvious in our show, certainly in the first two episodes, where you're like, wait, okay, where they're constantly moving positions and they're adjusting to where they are at different points in their lives. And it's not just for Kamala to negotiate. It's also for both her parents to negotiate and figure out too and adjust to change. And I think that being feeling real and feeling presented without judgment and presented with compassion from us as writers, yep, mm-hmm, felt really important. And very personally recognizable to me. So yeah,
absolutely right. I mean, it's that tension is between Kamala, who is very much a young Pakistani American girl, and her parents, who are so traditionally Pakistani in their outlooks. I mean, they've come to America as immigrants, and they have, you know, they've been through so much. And that, mm-hmm, tension, I think, is just really, really interesting to the show. But there's a warmth there, which I thought was really, really lovely.
Yeah, thank you. And I think to also put this to you is that they're also not isolationary. Like, if you look, yeah, at how, I'm trying to be careful what I say, but how they embrace Bruno, they embrace Bruno, integrate that familiarity, that love between them, that felt really beautiful and important to us.
Yeah.
And like, there's two scenes, like small little details that we put in there that I was like, oh yeah, see, we're not isolating ourselves. We're not like this, yeah, these parents, these strict traditional, that's too simple. That's not what we're going for.
Precisely.
And it's not real for me, and it's not real for this audience, I think. So that layer of complexity, that actually it's not as clear cut as traditional versus non-traditional, yeah, is really what we wanted to accomplish, I think.
I absolutely agree. But Bishop, we don't talk about Bruno. Sorry.
I wish that had come out at the time in the writers' room, because we would have been singing that all the time. And the number of team Bruno, team not Bruno conversations that were going on, full on fights in the writers' room. Oh my gosh, it was great.
Okay, we're tiptoeing around stuff, but I think people can guess what this means. But I'm very much firmly team Bruno. I'm just gonna.
Is it?
I'm gonna nail my colors to the mast. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. I will come back to me on like an Empire spoiler podcast in like 5 weeks, and then let's talk.
It's a deal. But there's also, you talked there about, you know, how specific Kamala is as a character, and it's not just, you know, it's not just about it being culturally specific. It's also about the fact she's a teenage girl. You know, we've seen Peter Parker in the MCU. We've seen a teenager grow up in the MCU, but this felt really new and fresh and different to me. And I never thought I would see the day when tampons were not only discussed in a Marvel property, but shown in a Marvel property. Obviously, Bishop, I passed out when I came to, the episode was over, so I had to go back and rewatch it again. But that again feels like something that, I don't know whether a battle had to be fought for that to happen. Can you talk me through presenting that aspect of her?
The battles that were fought, we will never speak of. because I won enough of them to be happy, and so
good,
they never happened.
Good.
But that was not a battle at all. And Sana, especially, Sana Manat, our producer, one of the executive producers, she was so great about these things and such a champion of everyone and everything. And like, it's hard to be a champion of everyone and everything when there's so many like very strong headed creators involved, and she managed this with such finesse. What a hero. But she would never second guess things like that. That was important to her as much as it was important to me. And I think, yeah, I'm so, even though we kind of created it, still when I see some of the things we've managed to put on in a Marvel TV show, I'm like, we are bananas what we got through on this show. And like, there's more to come, guys. And so, yeah, the fact that there's never in all of Marvel ever, you've never seen a tampon or anyone talk about a pad, like, It's a teenage girl. It's a big deal.
I'm passing out again here. I'm a blood bitch. I can't.
People were stressed about the powers. Wait till they see the tampons. Right.
Yes.
I'm gonna get
in
so
indeed.
Much trouble. That sound clip's gonna murder me. Yeah.
That should be the tagline, honestly. Stick that in your poster. That's what I say. But there's.
I'm so dreading the tweets. I'm so dreading full of fear.
It's all good. But there's so much about Kamala which is just amazing. You really love the character from The Off as well. And yeah, I know that there's a thin dividing line between Iman and Kamala, which is really interesting.
Oh my goodness.
When she came on board, when you cast her, did you have to tailor the character at all for her, or was the fact that she basically was Kamala sans superpowers, was that helpful to you?
it was certainly helpful. As soon as I met her, when she, the first time I met her was when she was brought out for a screen test. This was pre-COVID, just pre-COVID by like a week. And I was with Sarah Finn, the casting director, and we had the monitors while she was doing some scenes.
Right.
And me and Sarah Finn, like, both teared up watching her on the monitor. Both immediately, like, tears were in our eyes because we're like, oh my God, it's come up. It's her. We found her. And for me, because, like, for those kind of test things, like, it's not my best work because we're, like, in a rush and I also have to write the actual show. But then later when I was hearing her deliver the lines that we'd written, and also adapting, it was important to adapt to her in terms of I'm in my 30s. I'm not a teen in 2022. And I'm very aware of that. I'm not precious in the sense that, if you want to adapt a joke to fit your voice, let's adapt the joke to fit your voice. That's important. And I think that's the actor's art. That's the actor's creativity gets to come into it too. Yeah. So things are adapted to change, not the storyline, but certainly the in the moment to moment and how she would deliver things, what was comfortable for her, how she speaks and expresses herself. That's a lot of that is her. And it's so important to be able to adapt to that. So it's a combination, I would say. And she, it was super helpful to me also, because I could hear the dialogue. As soon as, like I said, when we were at that monitor, I could hear my dialogue and my writer's rooms, all the writer's dialogue, I could hear it in her in that moment. I could hear those words coming out of her. And I was like, yes, this is right. This makes sense. And it was just like, it was so like fake magic. Like, you know, when you have like a memory, you're like, did that happen? It was like fake magic. And now she just is her. Like, there's no, and I was so excited. I was like, oh my God, like they don't even, like the world doesn't even know that this is the new generation of Marvel and she just walked into our lives. Like, I had this like moment of thinking that, like, oh shit, oh, she's here and it's happening. So
Sarah Finn, I mean, is the casting, almost the sort of the Infinity Stone, the casting Infinity Stone. She's at the center of everything. So
of everything.
Yeah. So she just, you know, with her, you got the sense almost immediately. And, you know, she was just like, yeah, this is it. We don't have to look anymore. And then you just go out to the room and go, I mean, sorry, girls,
we've been looking. We had been looking. I'd been like on people's Instagrams being like, she could audition. Like, it was an intense and very vast search because it was really very specific. We knew some of the things that we needed. We also, there's a tone to Kamala. There's a vibe to her. There's an energy. Sorry to get woo-woo on you, but there's something like inherent in her that this person had to encapsulate. And also, we didn't want to cast like someone a lot older to play someone that character's age, right? So that was something that felt important. That also meant someone who could adapt to being on a humongous set and in production, learning your lines, hitting your marks. Those are things that you have to have confidence that someone's going to be able to pick up as well through the training and the learning. So it's like, man, the target is small. Like, the target of all those things is small. So it was a really extensive search. And I saw, like, her audition was just her filming herself. I think it was, I don't know if I've made this memory up, but, like, I think the video was, like, her filming herself in a bathroom or in front of a really tall mirror and delivering the thing. And we saw it and we're like, yeah, let's get her to read and do all this kind of thing. So it was really Sarah's magic of, like, going out into the world. And I can't speak for Sarah. I'd never like to speak for anybody else, but in that moment at least I felt a connection with Sarah and a connection with this moment of like, oh wow, you've done your magic again. Like, she's here and I can't believe it. She's so like the new, she's it. Sorry, I'm such a hype girl for Miss Marvel.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely, hype away. And there's a really interesting, there's a really important character in the show that we don't see for obvious reasons, unless of course you got like a super duper mega cameo up your sleeve, you know, telling us about for the last episode, yeah, which is of course Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel. And I wanted to ask about that from the point of view of incorporating her into this world. So we're post Endgame, we're post the battle of Endgame. But by and large, Captain Marvel is a character who stays off the radar in that universe. So did you have conversations about how well known she is and how much people have seen her, that sort of stuff?
This debate, how it raged, this debate. Yes, we had many a conversation. Like, that doesn't make sense. How does she even know she exists? Like, yeah, I get it, guys. So there's loads of going back and forth and going round and round with Kevin, especially because also there are elements like that in terms of the connectivity with the rest of the MCU,
yeah,
that are not necessarily inherently character based, which is my constant focus. And that are also constantly changing, right? Like the schedules are changing, or when different shows are going to be released is changing. Like Moon Knight, we were actually started writing before Moon Knight started writing. and they released before us. So it was kind of like a flipperoo with Moon Knight in us. So things change all the time. So the information that the audience has is always is changing in real time. So by the time we're shooting our show, especially because we have COVID in the middle, something else could be in the public knowledge around the MCU, and depending on what's happened inside the MCU. So you're always, you have to be flexible and open to adapting some of the logistics, shall we say, of that kind of thing. The bits where we kind of answer the questions that you have within the show, we're like playful and cute, and but also it kind of made sense to me exactly how she knows everything that she does know about Captain Marvel. But at one point I was like, surely someone had an iPhone at the final battle in Endgame, and Kevin was like, Bishop, I don't know about that. Like, someone was filming it on their phone. Like, someone was live streaming it. Some Twitch streamer was like, I'm out here. Thanos has arrived. Like, guys, I believe it. So that was exhausted Bishop being like, I don't know how to solve this problem yet. But we got there in the end of the team. So, yeah, there's a lot of debates around those kind of moving pieces. And also, again, sorry to hop on about this, but we go back to character and what how we present that information is through Kamala, what Kamala would do. And I think that's, we got to a good solution in the end.
Fantastic. Well, I've got to let you go, Bishop. I just real quick, I wanted to ask you, there's a podcast that is alluded to in the opening minutes of the show. Is there any talk about making that podcast a reality? Because I would love to hear it.
My dream. I would listen to that podcast nonstop. I don't know the answer to that yet. I will pitch it to Kevin next time he jumps through my skylight.
Which will be any second now, because I'm going to let you go. Bishop Kate Ali, it's been an absolute pleasure. And yes, spoiler special. Let's do it. 5 weeks' time. Make it so.
I can't wait. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks very much. Take care. And that was Bishop Kate Ali. And last but not least in our Miss Marvel marathon is Sana Aminet, who is not just an editor at Marvel Comics, actual Marvel Comics, but it's also the co-creator of Kamala Khan and is part of the creative and producing team on Miss Marvel, the show, which, and this is where we began, is something of a first for the company in terms of a comic book creator porting over to the TV show or movie inspired by that character. We spoke about that, we spoke about AvengerCon, and we spoke about the challenges and rewards of seeing a character you created come to life in front of your very eyes, so to speak. Do please enjoy. We are delighted to be joined in this Miss Marvel preview podcast by Sana Aminet, the producer of the show. How are you?
I am great. Thank you so much for having me here.
Indeed. And I should have said, co-creator of Miss Marvel, co-creator of Kamala Khan. And I've been racking my brains. I think this is the first time in the history of the MCU that someone who co-created the character has been involved in the translation to the big screen.
Yeah, it's actually kind of wild. I mean, I don't have the exact facts, but I feel like that might be true. I think when Kevin hired me to be the producer on the series, he very much, I think, was entrusting me with this kind of new role of really evolving the character from the comic to live action, which can be challenging because you look at it from a very, you know, one perspective and being able to kind of let go of certain things. But it's been such a wonderful journey. And I feel really lucky to be able to continue to tell Kamala's story, that they have continued to entrust me with it. That's been really incredible and awesome and scary and all the things.
Let's talk about the scary stuff first. What was the scariest part of it for you?
Oh my God. You know, the scary part was like making sure that it really stayed true to what the comics, what I love about the comics, even just as a fan myself of the comics, like what I loved so much about it. And so just making sure that it felt really kind of funny and off the cuff and quirky and weird and still had a lot of love and joy and heart to it. I think that was a challenge, and just making sure stylistically it felt right. And tonally, all of those things. And, you know, I will say, like, we have such a wonderful creative team, from our directors to our department heads, you know, our composer and all the different kinds of musicians and artists we brought on board. I feel very lucky that people understood that and have kind of decided to try different and new things. And that, I think, has translated beautifully the comic into the show and still makes the show feel like its very own thing. So I'm very, very happy about that.
And what was the easiest thing? What was the thing that you thought might be challenging in terms of translating Kamala to the screen, and actually was a cinch when it happened?
Our cast, hands down, our cast. They're amazing. I mean, often people, I mean, we've been talking, like, Iman, everyone knows she's perfect. She's absolutely Kamala Khan through and through. But we also have such an incredible cast across the board. Nakia, Bruno, Kamran, you know, Yusuf, Maniba, Amir, Taisha, like, you know, Sheikh Abdullah. Like, we just got such great cast who just, like, you don't have to give many notes to. Like, they'll do a scene and you're like, yeah, that was good. You know, like, that, I didn't see that person. Oh, that was great. You know, or you give a note to and they take the note in unexpected directions. And so it's been really awesome to see them transform the characters. And they really have made it easier. They've really made the show into what it is because they're all so talented and so really fun to work with. So fun to work with.
So talk me through. There are two very specific firsts with Iman and with Kamala that I wanted to talk about. One is the first day you saw her on set as this character that you were there. You co-created this character. Yeah. What that was like for you. And then this first time, maybe in the same day, but the first time you saw her as full on Kamala Khan with costume and powers and everything.
So it's funny. So obviously, like, the first time I met, you know, Iman on set it was just Iman Vellani. She showed up, she's wearing like a cute little outfit and she just like looked so cool and she had these cool gold glasses. I'm like, oh my God, she's such a cool girl. Like, it was like, this is so, I wish I was like her when I was her age. I was not even close to it. She was very confident and sweet and kind and on all and nervous, of course. But like when we first rolled camera, actually our first day on set, she, the first scene was her dressed up as Captain Marvel in one of Brie Larson's actual costumes, one of the doubles costumes from Captain Marvel. So she was feeling it. She was feeling so good just walking in, like just lots of power and energy. And she threw herself through a window. She did a stunt. It was really awesome. So it was a great day to be on set. Very surreal, very meta, because it's like, you know, Kamala is Captain Marvel, Iman on the Marvel set, and she's a huge Marvel fan. So many meta things happening at the same time, which was so fun. And then when Iman wore the Ms. Marvel costume, it was so cool. We did a screen test and she kind of walked out so confident. I got really emotional just seeing that costume together for the first time. And she looked great. She looked also authentic and different. Mm-hmm. And it's so, Arjun Basin, I want to give a special shout out to our costume supervisor, a costume designer, who just really elevated overall the look of our show, but just that outfit. They made it in-house, which we never do at Marvel, and it just looked so great. And he's like, what am I doing? How am I doing this? And it's just, God, I've had a lot of emotional days in the last 2 years, and that was one of them. That was really one. And then when she sat on that lamppost, that killed me. That was a beautiful moment.
Awesome. Was that a day when a lot of people came to set for that one?
A lot of people came to set that day.
Who yeah. maybe didn't even need to be there.
Yeah. Who didn't need to be there. Yeah. It was pretty awesome. Yeah.
You know, speaking of this being in-house at Marvel, there's a really fun sequence towards the end of the first episode set at Avengers Con, which is a convention that I desperately want to be real. But the MC at that is Ryan Penagos, who is, of course, Agent M.
Yes, I love that. You're a real, you know the world, you know fandom.
Oh, me and Ryan, we're tight. We are tight.
Ryan, it was just fun because like we were like thinking of like who we were going to, we're like, oh, we'll get an MC guy, blah, blah, and we're doing all this different casting. And I was like, well, Kevin was like, well, why don't, like, should we just ask Ryan Penagos? Like, everybody knows him. I'm like, yeah, that would be amazing. And so I called up Ryan, and Ryan and I are also old friends because we worked together for so long. And he's like, sure, why not? And, you know, it was the middle of a pandemic and he had just had a baby. So he was so gracious. Yeah, I like that little wink. I felt that meta to me, too. It was like it was real. fandom, and hopefully there will be an AvengerCon in the future.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. I'd be bang up for that. And listen, yeah. You know, Sana and Kevin, if you're listening, and Kevin, I know you listen to the podcast because you've told me you have in the past, and you're and there's a season two of Ms. Marvel or a movie, and you're looking for someone to host AvengerCon 2. Don't go for Agent M. He's old hat. just slide into my DMs, and I'm cheap and I'm available and I'm willing to do it. That's it. There you go.
I don't think Kevin Feige knows what sliding into DMs is. I will tell you that.
I don't think Kevin slides into anyone's DMs. This is sure. He has people who slide into DMs for him. That's what that's what Kevin does. But there's another aspect of Kamala, which in terms of the translation from comic to screen, which has been much discussed, and I know you've talked about this in the past, but the powers, her skill set, and that is something that's very, very different, but also kind of not. Can you talk about that in terms of when that decision was made and why the decision was made?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it was important, you know, overall for Kevin, for the writer's room to try to evolve Kamala across the board to an extent. You know, and in the same way that her powers in the comics were really influenced by this like big event that happened in the MC in the Marvel universe at the time, we wanted the show to have Kamala's powers linked to something much bigger, both like in the MCU, but also linked to sort of her legacy, her past, her kind of cultural inheritance, and her family. And so I think that's really where the evolution came from, was to be able to kind of tell a different version of her powers, but at the same time, you know, still have the essence of what her powers are, which, you know, you've got the Embiggen Fist, they evolve across the season. I cannot say anything more than that, but there's some cool things that happen with her powers that I think are fun and quirky, and just like, you know, her also navigating them and them kind of showing up in weird ways. And I think that is, you know, just a lovely metaphor still of her kind of growing and evolving herself. And her kind of learning to understand what it means to kind of show yourself as who you are versus pretending to be somebody else, which is one of the first challenges that Kamala goes through, which is also very much a challenge of the comics.
Absolutely. And there's the decision, and I know it's been shown in the trailers, so I hope we could talk about it to an extent. The heirloom, the bracelet, that's a really interesting way to go as well. Can you talk about that? And which ties into, as you say, that sort of cultural specificity that it is an heirloom, because a lot of the show so far in the two episodes I've seen is about that sort of push-pull, that tension between the past and tradition and the future and the now, and pushing ahead and forging your own path whilst also incorporating traditions from your background and from your cultural background as well.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of what the entire show is all about. I mean, I think that the bangle is sort of representative of kind of aspects of Kamala and who she is and where she's come from. And at the same time, making it a little bit more her own. I mean, the bangle is its own little piece of her history and her past. And I'm not going to be able to tell so much more about what happens with it and what it is, but it is an aspect of how her powers get. I know you tried, but
I promise you.
You don't want to be spoiled. You don't want to be spoiled anyway. You want to enjoy the ride. I think it is sort of a symbol of her identity. And I think we explore that with trying to understand a little bit more about where it came from and why she has it and why it is so integral to her next chapter in her life. I love that. I mean, I think the entire show is about sort of that, yes, that push and pull of where you're from and where you want to go and who you want to become and learning how to kind of bring it all together in this sort of special new form. I think that's what I'm very excited about with this show.
I think stylistically, this is perhaps one of the biggest departures in the MCU. It feels so fresh and vibrant. And I spoke to Adil and Bilal. My God, those guys are whirlwinds of energy. And
Yeah. Try being on set with them for 10 hours a day.
That's, I guess there's two of them, so they get way more done than
that's other directors
anyway.
It's helpful. Yeah.
But was that, they said very much that the part of the decision to incorporate elements like the animated elements and the idea that the Kamala's daydreams are manifested on screen for us to see, that was something that they brought to the pitch. But was that something that you guys were talking about even in the conception of the show, that it would feel different from other shows or even other films in the MCU?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that was when we were working with the scripts, the first thing that, you know, when I was talking to the directors about it was like, how do we introduce her world and how do we make it feel unique? And they, you know, really gravitated towards the comics, which I really appreciated. And they're like, well, you know, she is someone who kind of looks at the world differently. So what can we do to be able to relay that? And, you know, fan fiction is a big part of Kamala's life. Maybe the third page in the comic, she's already drawing fan fiction. And, you know, and so, you know, I that was one of the things that I had brought up, was I was like, well, she's fan fiction, she writes fan fiction. And they're like, what about animation? Like, how do you, you know, how can we incorporate animation in a real world? And them and Nordine, our VFX supervisor, just created this whole presentation about like the kind of animation that would exist in this world and how it could look different. And that's really, I think, sold the show, but also made the show feel different and also kind of similar to the comics, because the comics are also kind of weird and quirky and have weird things happening in the background. So it was like a nice confluence of different ideas coming together, and they really championed it, and I'm so happy that they did.
Amazing. I believe I have to let you go, which is a massive shame.
I'll come back.
Indeed. We'll hopefully talk after the show has finished, but it's been an absolute pleasure. Sana, thanks so much to you for your time.
Thank you so much. It was lovely talking to you.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye.
Okay, so that was Sana Amanet, and that is it for our Miss Marvel preview podcast. The show, of course, begins on Wednesday, June 8th, and frankly, folks, if the quality of the last four episodes is as good as the first two, then we're in for something special. Now, of course, there's always a chance that it could both screw the pooch and jump the shark, but, you know, I think we're going to be good. Of course, if it did, that would be absolutely terrible for our weekly spoiler special podcasts, because yes, indeed, as with every live-action MCU show to date, we are going to be recording spoiler special podcasts for every episode of Ms. Marvel and putting them up as soon as is humanly possible. And yes, we know that Obi-Wan Kenobi, overlaps for the next 3 weeks. I'm sure recording and editing two lengthy podcasts in the same day won't kill me. It's not like it's working down a mine! Anyway, these will be available for spoiler special subscribers, and if you don't already subscribe, then now is the time, because these spoiler pods, folks, they're a ton of fun. And they may even feature the return of the beloved, in some quarters, Empire Podcast Marvel Studios Fanfare Orchestra. Who knows? We shall see. If you fancy subscribing, then simply go to empire.supportingcast.fm. That's empire.supportingcast.fm to sign up for just $2.99 a month. That's £2.99 a month, not £299 a month. That would be ridiculous. Or £33 a year, $32.99 a year. Bargain. Right, that's it for me. I'm off to lobby hard to play AvengerCon host number 2 alongside Marvel's very own Agent M in the second season of Ms. Marvel. I will also accept a cameo in the Marvels. Thank you for listening. See you next time. Bye.